Chapter 86 Finale. It was a hot, muggy morning, despite the seaborne breeze. Tuln stood on the battle line, waiting in the heat as the Vaden army assembled atop the late ridge. The men around him shuffled anxiously. Not an honor guard. In Tuln's experience, an honor guard was just something to get in the way, something to keep a lord out of danger. He did not intend to stay out of danger. The lives of too many men would depend on this battle, men he had trained, men who trusted him. It was a dangerous position for him to be in, helping one kingdom above another. Heralds were not supposed to fight men's wars for them, nor were they supposed to favor one faction over another. Yet working with them, training them from disorganized scavengers into a cohesive army, had caused an affection to grow within Tuln. How could it not? The men who stood by him, therefore, were no honor guard, but comrades. They carried spears, not swords, and they wore no expensive armor. Tuln chose to fight beside the spearmen he had trained, and this time Jasnah could not complain. At Kolinar he had been too valuable to risk, but in this battle they were all at risk. The heat did not abate, and his men began to grumble.
"Steady,"
Tuln cautioned, glancing toward the ridge and the army that sat on its lip. The Vaden army had not pushed their march hard. They would have been foolish to do so. No, they were rested and prepared. But so were his men. Though Tuln was loath to admit it, the previous evening had done his men good. Intara had sent them food and drink, though not much of the latter. After so much marching and fleeing, an evening of relaxation had helped their overall strength. Perhaps they had been able to forget, for a moment, the danger that was coming. The danger that had arrived. The Vaden warriors lined up in great formations atop the ridge, ready to march down the slope. Lady Jasnah had arranged the Aleth forces as Tuln had projected, placing their backs to the city. The Vadens would march down from the southwest, exposing themselves to bowshot from the city walls. The Aleth armies would keep Vaden awakeners from getting to and destroying the walls themselves. There was no room to back away, however. If the Vadens overran them, the Aleth forces would be crushed against the city. The men continued to shift. They had only seen true battle once at Kolinar. This fight would be different. In fact, it was opposite. The Vaden forces held the high ground and would come crashing down upon the smaller Aleth armies. Hopefully, none of his men saw the connection, that this was almost exactly the same strategy they had used against their enemies at Kolinar. The men were nervous, but Tuln expected that. He had stood with many a nervous, untested line during his extended lifetime. He had been a herald for so long that he had forgotten what it was like to fear death. How nice it would be, that fear of the unknown. True, it was uncomfortable, but at least it contained a measure of hope. Tuln was left with something far worse. He knew exactly what awaited him when he died. Madness, torture, and pain. He had to struggle not to think of it, lest the fires return. They threatened anyway. It had been a while since he had felt their creeping touch. They had stayed away almost all that time with Jasnah, but now she was lost to him.
"Is it possible for a man to so fill his life with important things that he doesn't have time enough left for the ones that are vital?"
He had said he didn't know, but that was a lie. He knew the answer, even if he didn't want to admit it. The sky turned red. The heat of the day suddenly seemed weak compared to the fires in his mind.
"No," Tuln thought, "not now. I will not fail these men."
He forced the fires away, quenching them with determination. A figure moved up beside him, though Tuln was so distracted by the conflict within that he barely noticed its arrival. He breathed deeply, controlling himself, before finally looking to the side. Kemnar smiled, glistening in his shard plate.
"Shouldn't you be with the lords?" Tuln asked.
Kemnar shook his head. If there's one thing I've learned, my friend, it's this. When there's a battle, I want to be as close to you as humanly possible. Taln smiled, and somehow Kemnar's friendly face gave him the final boost he needed to push away the fires. Kemnar was a link to Yasna. Kemnar tensed suddenly, and the men around Taln grew still. Taln turned in time to see the Vaden forces begin piling over the ridge in neat formations. The battle had begun. Jek, Sun Valano, Truthless of Shinovar, rode beside his master and lord, King Ovin of Vaidnar. The king trailed the last columns of men down the side of the late wall, moving to join the mobile command center that the Vaden officers immediately organized at the back of the lines. The sounds of battle had already begun by the time Ovin dismounted and joined the generals.
"Why don't we stay up there?" Ilhadal Devar asked anxiously, nodding toward the late ridge.
The Devar First Prince obviously didn't enjoy being so close to the actual fighting.
"Because," Ovin said simply, "we would be too far from the battle itself."
"And if they break through to attack?" Ilhadal asked.
Ovin looked up, glancing at his generals, who smiled with amusement.
"Let us hope they do,"
Ovin said, looking down as several aides erected a table and battle map.
"How many shardbearers do you count in the immediate area, Ilhadal?"
"You, myself, Generals Tanata, Janazin, Lanmar, Dentara. I worry for any soldiers foolish enough to wander this direction. Of course, if you wish, you may wait atop the ridge with the scribes and the servants."
Ilhadal flushed.
"General Tanata," Ovin said, looking up from the map, "your battle arrangement is stunning. I commend you."
"Thank you, Your Majesty,"
the man said with a modest nod.
"If you would indulge me, I do have one request," Ovin continued.
"Of course, Your Majesty."
"Send scouts along the battle lines," Ovin requested. "Discover the sub-commanders and shardbearers who lead each section of Aleth resistance. As you know, I have been granted some measure of political understanding from the Almighty. I might be able to lend you some insight into how our enemies will resist."
"I will make the order immediately, Your Majesty," the general said.
Ovin stood up straight, looking across the field of battle.
"Her touch is here, assassin," he said, quiet enough that only Jack could hear. "She controls this fight as expected. It is so similar to tactics she has used before. But something is different, and I still can't place it. The songs she requested last night seemed random. The song of 100 lovers, the blessing of Minala, windborn fate. Something has changed."
Jack did not answer, and Ovin just shook his head, looking down at the table again.
Taln fought. He truly fought. Not as he had before, no short, quick battles executed with restraint and poise. No, this time he fought as a warrior, as a herald. He attacked with some of the skill he normally reserved for the Stormshades. Against men, such power seemed egregious. Taln was as a storm blowing across scraps of paper. Soon after he began, Kemnar and the spearmen moved back, giving him room to fight. Where Taln struck, lines buckled, squads exploded, and men died. He had to continue moving, otherwise the corpses around him grew too thick to allow other foes to approach. And as he fought, the fires began to mount. They were far at first, but they crept forward, hungering for his sanity. In the distance, far away, he could hear the screams, the terrible, inhuman yells that accompanied the dark thing that came with the fires, the dark thing that came for him.
"They shouldn't be,"
Taln thought as he fought, shearing through three men at once, spraying their blood across the line of men behind. A shardbearer stepped up to stop him, but the man was little more than a bump in Taln's path. The shardbearer fell like the others, killed by sword strokes that came faster than the man could register.
Why do the fires come from me?
Talon thought with frustration.
I'm not failing. I am strong.
But he knew he had failed. He was serving one side, true, but he was destroying another. Every life he took was a man who would not stand with humankind against the Kothan. When the armies of humankind were overrun, how would Talon be able to justify those men he had killed? There was a deeper failure beyond that. He said he was determined to serve mankind, but how could he serve mankind if he himself were not stable? He had found someone who drove the fires back, someone who brought peace to a soul that had been darkened by far too many years. If he had dedicated himself to her and accepted the sanity she offered, would not that have been better for mankind? He thought to sacrifice his own love for the good of Roshar. It wasn't until after he had done so that he realized his love of Yasna and his love of Roshar were not opposing needs, but one and the same.
You're sheltering him.
Yasna looked up with surprise. Their command center lay in one of the corner towers of the city wall. From the tower's vantage, they could watch the battlefield with ease. An open square room, it was designed for archer placements, but had easily been converted to hold a large map table.
Here,
Dalinar said, pointing toward the map and indicating a section of the eastern flank, the section where Talon fought.
I realize that he is important to your plans, Yasna, but there's no reason to protect the Herald now. He has helped the morale of the troops, but you cannot waste resources protecting him. Besides, from all reports, he's almost an army unto himself. I don't think you need to worry.
Of course, Yasna said quickly, covering her flush. Dalinar was right. She was dedicating too many resources to Talon's side of the battle. She made a few commands, fixing the problem. Dalinar nodded.
I'm going to that hill near the docks, he said. We've lost 2 shard bearers there. I need to find whoever's dueling them.
Take a troop of heavy infantry with you, Yasna said. Have them block that hole east of the hill. I've sent 3 squads of spearmen there and it still keeps weakening. Dalinar nodded, sending a messenger to prepare his horse. He paused, looking back at her.
I'm glad you're here, Yasna. There is no one I'd rather trust my battlefield to than yourself. With you here, I think we can win this.
Yasna nodded thankfully, and he was off. Unfortunately, his brave words were no match for her logic. It was going to be a difficult battle. She had never faced such poor fighting conditions. The enemy odds weren't overwhelming, but they were great enough to give ominous signs on the map. In addition, the enemy commanders were obviously competent. Not geniuses, but neither fools. They used a straightforward, stable offense. They didn't need flashiness to win, only consistency. Beyond that, there was a hint of something else. While most of the moves were basic, the enemy maneuvers contained occasional hints of brilliance. An offensive strike would work particularly well for a reason she couldn't quite discern, or a squad of troops would defeat a commander who should have had no problem with such numbers. It could have been coincidence, but collected together, the incidents formed a pattern. Someone on the other side was either very gifted or very lucky. Yasna looked up from the map, glancing through the window toward the battlefield itself. Several lines of troops were marching back to join her reserve forces, the first of the squads she had withdrawn from around Talon. He will be fine, she thought. He doesn't need any help. He's Talon. Besides, there was always Kemnar. Good, efficient Kemnar. Though she had decided not to give him any more orders, she had given him this one final request, to watch over Talon. He'll be fine, she repeated to herself. The winds know, of all the people you need to worry about on this battlefield, Taln is the last.
The man fights like a storm shade, Delinar thought, shivering slightly despite the heat.
Before going to the hill he had mentioned to Jasnah, Delinar had decided to come see if the reports and rumors were true. It was more than just curiosity. There was something in Jasnah's voice when she spoke of the madman, something Delinar couldn't place. At first he had thought it to be affection, but such wasn't likely to come from the Lady Jasnah. Eventually he had realized what it was. She was starting to believe. Despite all of her logic, all of her words against the Almighty and his worship, Jasnah Kulin was coming to believe in this madman herald. And so Delinar had come to see for himself, had come to watch the man who could inspire belief in a woman such as Jasnah. And he was impressed. Taln wasn't just a shard-bearer. Though he fought without plate, he took no wounds. Though he had the bulk of a longtime warrior, he moved with the grace of a dancer. And he was brutally efficient. None of the men he struck arose, few even moved. No weapon could come close to him without being sheared in two, and no man could stand against him without being brushed aside. He was almost too good. It was like he didn't even need the army at his back, like he could take the entire Vaden force on his own. Delinar shivered, turning his horse to seek out his destination. He knew what it was like to be good at killing, and wondered what burdens this false herald carried. Perhaps they were what had driven him mad.
"Bah!" General Tanata said. "I'm not sending another shardbearer to the eastern flank. That man has killed 5 already. Let him slaughter spearmen all day if he wishes. Our blades will do more good elsewhere."
Jek studied the map. The Vaden forces had tried pushing against the east first, but the man who called himself a herald formed too strong an opposition. It wasn't just him. Where he fought, other soldiers seemed to do better as well. Together with them, the herald formed an impenetrable flank that had rebuffed every offensive. The west, however, was another story. It was here that Avan had been focusing his subtle yet telling suggestions. Slowly, Jek was beginning to wonder if the idiot king's philosophy was not justified. One man, Avan Vaidenel, was having a very profound effect on this particular battle.
"General," Avan said, drawing Tanata's attention, "might I make another suggestion?"
"Your Majesty," Tanata said, "the last 7 suggestions you've made have brought down entire sections of the Aleth line. Whatever it is, you need not ask our permission to give the order."
Jack saw Avan's subtle smile. These men would reject a usurper, especially one with little obvious battle experience. But like most soldiers, they responded quickly to results.
"The Aleth forces have just shored up this far western section with a group of heavy infantry," Avan explained. "That squad is led by one Tavan Reintar, a high-ranked lord, but one without a shard blade. Tavan is a stalwart man, not prone to quick judgment. However, he tried the entire Prelir campaign to earn himself a blade and failed. Most of the few mistakes of command he made were performed because he was so desperate to get himself one of the weapons."
"Your command?" Tanata asked.
"Send a shard-bearer who doesn't have plate to attack the spearmen a short distance from Tavan. Tavan won't be able to resist sending his squad to attack, and you can have your forces ready to surround and destroy him."
"It will be done,"
Tanata said, moving off to give the orders. Most of the other generals had gone to the battlefield somewhere, working as shard-bearers to seek duels, fill in weak sections, or do extra damage to the enemy. Avan placed his hands on the map as if trying to see his personal enemy through its numbers and movements.
"She's there," he whispered. "She fights me, but she doesn't realize it. I know her, and she doesn't know me. That is her weakness. And there is more, but what?"
He became fixated on the map, standing over it even as scribes approached and replaced it with another, marked with new troop placements and formations. Arvin stared at it after they had gone, his mind distant. Then he looked up, an almost demonic smile forming on his lips.
The song of 100 lovers, the blessing of Minalla, wind-born fate. Do you recognize these songs, assassin?
No, Jack said. Should I?
Arvin's smile deepened.
They are the same songs that were favored by the man Tethryn Rinar.
Jack frowned.
Romantic ballads, assassin, Arvin explained, eyes alight, voice going soft. Lady Yasna Colin is in love.
Of course she is, Jack said. Your spies say she was recently married.
Arvin shook his head.
The man married us. Her supposed husband is over here, in a section of the battlefield receiving almost no attention. These are songs of unfulfilled love, assassin.
He looked down at the map, speaking quietly.
Yes, the overdefense of the fourth eastern line makes sense now. Everything makes sense now. I know you, Yasna Colin. I understand you.
He looked up, staring into Jack's eyes.
She has bothered me for too long, assassin. She escaped my trap. She ran from my soldiers, but she cannot hide from you. It is time for you to earn your title. It is time to destroy Yasna Colin.
The fires eventually descended upon him. The men around Taln burst alight, bodies flaring until he fought figures made only of flame.
Cloaks, he thought. Focus on the cloaks.
He forced himself to maintain this one detail of reality. Flames in blue were allies. Flames in white were enemies. After that, he dueled with the flames. He stood in magma, ignoring its searing touch. Each figure he struck sprayed fire into the air, tiny molten droplets flashing red. The mountains beyond were pyres to the dead, and the sky above was a dome of burning rage. The screams hounded him, but he kept fighting. He couldn't tell which yells came from the flames inside and which came from the deaths of his enemies. He stopped caring and only fought. He knew that hundreds had died beneath his sword already, and hundreds more would come. He struck across the inferno, protecting the blue, killing the white. Here a blue stumbled, and he moved, their protection. Here a white stumbled, and he moved, their death. He barely felt the prick in his side. It was a small thing, really. A blue moved away, a man Taln had been defending, and his addled mind had to struggle to make the connection. One of his own men had struck him. He tried to keep fighting, but his side gave in to the fires. He reached down with a bemused hand and then lifted it up. His palm and fingers flared red, blazing, matching the sky and sun overhead. He grew weak. Heralds were strong, and they were powerful, but their bodies were not immortal, only their souls. They died every return, eventually. All was alight, and from within the depths of the flame came the dark, screaming thing, the thing that always stalked him. He knew it now, finally. It was a piece of him, the section of his mind that was completely mad, the piece of his soul that he had banished months before. Taln stumbled to his knees as the churning, insane thing approached him. It held memories that Taln did not want to face, memories of an eternity in agony, memories of a man broken. He wanted to push it away, but he was getting weak, so weak. He wanted to scream at it, but he could no longer speak. He fell backward, smashing to the hard stones beneath, and the dark thing loomed over him. He had no voice for yells, only a whisper.
Yasna,
he mumbled as the dark madness took him, and the flame that was Taln fled into the void. The false herald collapsed. Dead. Jack pulled up the side of his stolen Aleth cloak, obscuring his face as best he could as he screamed, "The herald!" Men stopped fighting on both sides to regard the dead man.
"The herald is dead!"
Jack screamed in a terrified voice.
"We are doomed!"
Around him, squads shattered. A group of men ran forward to the herald's side as if to protect him, but they were, of course, too late. They were too focused on the corpse, and the Vaden aggressors cut them down. A surge of revitalized strength pumped through the Vaden line. The beast that had tormented them had fallen, and suddenly they remembered that they really were on the dominant side of this particular battle. An equal surge of sudden despair washed across the Aleth ranks as the horrible truth struck them. Their god was dead. He would protect them no more, and if he could be killed, then what hope did they have? As Jack fled the battle, Avon's voice whispered to him from the past. "The more perfectly a leader maintains the appearance that he is infallible, the more his soldiers will be able to ignore their own guilt, and the better they will fight. But if he falls..." Behind Jack, the Aleth line crumbled.
Jasnah saw the ranks falter through her window, but she didn't know the horrible truth. Not until the beleaguered messenger arrived. She nodded at his words, but stopped listening halfway through. He was obviously speaking lies, she decided, as she sat back onto her stool, eyes unfocusing. Men shouldn't lie to battle commanders. It created all kinds of confusion. It was a few moments before Jasnah realized the man was trying to get her attention. She said yes to whatever he was asking, though she couldn't understand his words. They were garbled, ridiculous, lies.
The Shardbearer finally yielded. Dalinar stepped back, puffing and dismissing his blade as a squad of soldiers rushed forward to take the enemy Shardbearer captive, stripping him of plate and blade. Former Aleth Shardbearers who had lost their blades waited back at the city, hoping to be equipped with captured weapons so that they could rush onto the battlefield and bolster their side. Dalinar grimaced, holding his arm. His opponent's blade had bit deeply there, scarring the metal and pushing a strip of it into Dalinar's shoulder. He could feel blood seeping into his gauntlet and cursed the foolish mistake that had given him the wound. He would have to return to the city to be bandaged. As he turned and pulled himself, with some effort, onto horseback, he noticed a messenger dashing his direction. Dalinar moved back away from the line, riding slowly to meet the man.
"My lord," the messenger said, puffing, "you are needed at the command center. The eastern line is crumbling."
"What?" Dalinar demanded. "What is Jasnah doing?"
"She cannot help us, my lord. Something's happened to her."
"What?" Dalinar asked. "Is she hurt?"
"No, my lord," the messenger said. "The herald fell. When she heard the news, she was stunned. None of us can get through to her."
Dalinar cursed, kicking his horse into motion. He arrived at the city a few minutes later and clinked up to the command center, moving with the plate wearer's speed. He found Jasnah sitting quietly, a sub-general furiously giving commands and trying to organize the eastern flank. The man sighed thankfully as Dalinar entered. Dalinar stepped up to the window and saw the horrible truth. The entire eastern flank had fallen, and a spurt of white was pouring through the gap, dividing the Aleth forces into two. It was like the final note of a tragic ballad. Perhaps if it had been plugged sooner.
"Do not fool yourself, Dalinar," he told himself. "Face the truth. The enemy has a fourth as many troops as you, better equipment and stronger men. This battle was doomed from the beginning. It's remarkable we held out as long as we did."
Dalinar turned to Jasnah. He knelt down, shaking her slightly by the shoulders.
"Jasnah."
She blinked a few times, then focused on him.
"Uncle?"
she said, as if in a daze.
"Jasnah, our lines are breaking. We need you."
She became a little more lucid, glancing around.
"Is it true?"
she asked.
"Is he dead?"
"Apparently," Dalinar said. "And then a chilling event happened, something Dalinar had never thought to see had he lived to be 1,000. A tear rolled down Jasnah's cheek.
"I loved him, uncle,"
she whispered.
"Kevahin," Dalinar thought, dumbstruck.
Even as a child, Jasnah had been so somber, never screaming like other girls. She had always been collected and controlled, even from her youth. In a way, he had almost stopped thinking of her as human. Jasnah was something else, something not affected by foolish emotions. But she was human, all too human.
"Oh, child," he said, pulling her close.
"My lord Dalinar!" an alarmed voice called. Dalinar stood. Jasnah's pain would have to wait. Alethkar was falling. He turned, several aides finally realizing his wound, rushing forward to remove his pauldron and pull out some bandages. A messenger stumbled up the stairs. Not the man who had fetched him on the field, but a different one. A man who, as Dalinar recalled, had been stationed on the late ridge.
"My lord," the messenger said, his face hinting that his news was not good.
"Speak," Dalinar said, sighing.
"The scouts have just spotted ships in the distance," the man said. "It's the Lochanron fleet, my lord. At least 30 vessels. Troop ships."
Dalinar closed his eyes, grunting as the aides pulled his bandage tight.
"So it was a game all along," he said. "They knew we didn't have a chance. They pushed us to the coast, then brought in their fleets."
30 or more vessels. Thousands, perhaps tens of thousands more men. In a strikingly unnerving thought, Dalinar realized something.
"I am the last king of Alethkar."
Jek entered the Vaden command camp to a scene of general jovialness. Two of the generals who had been afield had returned, and they stood around the map table, smiling and congratulating one another. At their head stood King Ovan. They recognized him for what he was now. When the generals saw Jek, they appraised him with new eyes. No longer was he simply Ovan's strange attendant. Now they understood him to be a warrior. They probably thought he had fought and killed the false herald in a fair duel.
"You have been keeping him from us all this time, your majesty," one of the generals chided.
"A secret weapon is of no use when it is widely known, Lord Janazin. Jek Sonson Volano is a tool to be used strategically."
Ovan smiled, full of himself. There was more to his joy than a simple victory. From now on, in future battles, the generals wouldn't just listen to suggestions. They would give him command, for he had earned it. And there would be further battles. Jek glanced at the man Balinmar, who stood quietly at the edge of the command center, watching the proceedings but never interacting. He had spoken truth. Ovan would continue on, would become a conqueror after this day. Ovan didn't want Alethkar. He wanted all of Roshar.
"My lord," an aide said calmly, approaching and bowing, "the Lochanron fleet has made contact. They intend to land on the beach to our south, then bring their troops up to be dispensed as you command."
"Hardly necessary now," General Tanata said, chuckling. "We've almost got the Aleth forces broken into 1/3 section. Only 5 hours into the battle and the end is already in sight."
"Come now, generals," Ovan said. "Did you ever think they would give us any real trouble? After what they've been through, it's surprising they didn't just surrender after the first hour."
Jek glanced to the side, and in the distance he could make out several 10 sets of dark spots approaching on the waters. The realization was painful, but Jek had to make it. Ovan had executed this day perfectly. From the manipulation of his own generals, to the defeat of Jasnah Kulin, to the destruction of Alethkar and timely arrival of reinforcements, the idiot king's genius was manifest. He was the most horrible man Jek had ever served, but he was also the most competent. Alethkar had never really stood a chance.
Across the waters, coming in from beneath a western wind, Marin Kolin gripped the ship's gunwale and squinted at the approaching shoreline.
"It's not looking good, Lord Marin," said Tamar, former head regent and now king of Lochinron. "The Aleth forces are divided and dying. One side is mashed against the city wall, the other force is much smaller and can't escape because of the river at their back."
Marin nodded, still watching the shore. Wind patterns shifted in the air as if a dozen different translucent sheets shimmered between himself and the land.
"Does Lord Delinar's glyph still fly?" he asked.
"Well, yes," Tamar said. "His banner is the highest above the city wall, marking him as the ranking nobleman at this battle."
"That is all I need to know," Marin said calmly.
"My lord," Tamar said hesitantly, "we can't land on the shore as you ordered. That's just not the way it is done. The tide and winds are wrong. We'll have to stay out in the bay and ferry our men in with the smaller vessels. It will take a great deal of time, and when we are finished, I fear that—"
"Tell your men to be ready," Marin said.
Tamar sighed, but waved over a messenger to deliver the order. Behind him stood Calden and several other men, all watching Marin expectantly. There was far too much faith in their eyes. Marin looked away from them. So much was confusing lately. Renarin wasn't dead, but neither was he really alive. Shinri had gone, and he hadn't even really grown to know her. Calden could have been a friend, but he was too worshipful. They expected so much from him. And what did he have? A few of Renarin's confusing explanations? A promise that he was a windrunner? He did know one thing for certain. Back at the dueling competition, when the need was great, he had called the winds. They had proven themselves his ally. Perhaps they would come again. He stood up and held aloft a jade pitcher scavenged from one of the quarters of a former Vaden captain. He closed his eyes. In the distance, the far, far distance, he could feel it. A high storm, still hours away from Roshar. It raged over the stone desert, blowing steadily in his direction. He didn't call to it, but he memorized it, felt it, knew it. And then he called upon the jade and commanded. Pain flashed up his arm and he gritted his teeth. A breeze passed over the ship, but he didn't need a breeze. He needed winds and fury. He needed a storm. He pushed the pains further, though they horrified him, not because of their agony, but because of what had happened to Renarin. "The pain is only a side effect," his friend had said. There was something more, a greater price. If he pushed too hard, would he lose his mind too? "If that is what I must suffer, then let it be," he thought, crying out at the pain as he pushed the winds with increasing strength. He focused on his responsibility. Months ago, he had made a mistake. He had broken his oath to Lord Dalinar and had betrayed his friendship with Arador. He would set both right at once. Lord Dalinar needed him. The ship lurched as the winds strengthened. Marin pushed against 40 different sails with a weight that was not his own, driving them forward. Everything hurt now, not just his arm. It was like he was tearing himself apart. Like he finally realized he was trying to throw himself into the wind, to become like it, fluid rather than solid. His body resisted and felt as if it would break, his bones snapping, his flesh ripping apart. The coast approached, but Marin did not stop the winds. They blew across his vessels like a sudden storm, furious but unilateral. The air roared, sails flapped, and wood lurched. Marin pushed his fleet onward, lining his vessels up along a great swath of the coast. Then, with a final agonizing heave, he slammed the boats up onto the rocky shores themselves, spraying waves of water across the sand and rocks. His command ship lurched to a stop, nearly throwing Marin over with its force. The pitcher shattered in his hand, fully half of it crumbling to dust from the stress of his mighty effort. Marin groaned, slumping against the gunwale, his body fuzzing to numbness. Behind him, Tamar and the others watched Marin with reverent awe.
Great, Marin thought, leaning back against the ship's railing and puffing slightly.
Well, he demanded, get your men out! We have to attack before they realize there aren't any Vadens captaining these ships.
The men moved. Hundreds flooded over the sides of the ships, gathering on the shore. Calden approached with Marin's plate, and Marin allowed the man to help him put it on. He had learned something odd about the plate. It interfered with the winds somehow. While Marin was wearing it, he couldn't push against himself. Neither could he touch a man wearing plate with the winds. Something built into the armor's magics protected men from the effects of his powers. This day, however, he didn't feel that he was going to be pushing with the wind much more. He couldn't afford to spend the entire battle numb. He had already hurt his body too much. He felt as though he could barely move, though the plate lent him some strength, pushing back the fatigue of wind running. Marin forced himself to stand up straight, ignoring his numb, useless arm. He took a breath, nodded to Calden, and the two of them leapt over the side of the ship and landed on the shore beyond. He waved to a group of several hundred soldiers, then began marching toward the battlefield. Other squads followed, forming into quiet ranks at first, moving exactly as the Vadens had ordered. It wasn't until they were up close that they broke with what was expected. The Vaden line stood exposed, its back to Marin's force, completely unaware. Marin summoned his blade and held the weapon aloft with his good arm, then broke into a plate-enhanced dash. Dalinar commanded an army of dead men. He did what he could, directing the battle from the walltop tower, organizing the forces as defensively as possible. Unfortunately, forcing his men to pull back meant further isolating the two halves, one of which he couldn't even reach with his messages. He could only help extend their death throes. He could not save them. So this is how it ends, Nolanaren, he thought, staring out over the battlefield. Trapped in a city that isn't even my own, fighting an enemy I thought was my friend. After Prelir, I thought I was through with war. I thought I would seek my hearth and spend time with my sons. He had no sons left. That part hurt the most. Bright, noble Shenaris, charismatic, witty Arador, and quiet, understanding Renarin. The three boys had been so different, yet they had each been a piece of him and a link back to the woman he had loved. At least they could be his final thoughts. It wasn't good for a father to live to be the last of his family. Jasnah sat behind, trying to help. Most of her old self had returned, but the Herald's death had shaken her, and Dalinar was loath to leave her in strategic command again. However, he doubted he had a choice. The men were faltering with Taln's death. They needed a leader so they could at least die knowing whose honor they served. He turned to inform her of his decision, but paused as he noticed a strange man speaking with the guards at the bottom of the command tower. He was dressed as a messenger, but he wore unfamiliar livery.
Light blue? Dalinar thought. Who wears light blue?
The guards eventually decided to let the newcomer pass, though they accompanied him up to the command center.
Lord Dalinar Quillin? The messenger asked.
Yes, Dalinar responded cautiously.
Lord Marin Quillin, commander of the Lochinron fleet, sends his greetings. He would like to know if there are any specific strategies you would like his armies to follow.
Dalinar frowned, not certain if his mind had snapped or if the man was just spouting nonsense.
My lord! One of the sub-commanders cried. Come look!
Dalinar glanced out the window. There, at the back of the enemy line, he saw an incredible sight. The Lochinron armies were charging the back of the Vaden lines. Dalinar turned back to the smiling messenger. Hope, an almost unrecognizable sensation, glimmered within him. Behind him, Jasnah stood, hurrying to the window.
Marin? Dalinar asked. Young Marin? From Alethkar?
Yes, my lord, the messenger said. He freed the Lochinron from Vaidenar, and we have come to pay back his heroism. He has told our armies to follow whatever battle commands you or Lady Jasnah might recommend.
Marin is alive.
My son, Dalinar demanded. Renarin, does he live?
The messenger hesitated. He has suffered a grievous wound, my lord.
But he lives?
Yes, my lord, the messenger said.
That is reason enough to continue fighting.
Yasna, you can command here.
Yes, uncle, she promised.
Bring my horse,
Delinar bellowed, replacing his pauldron as he pushed past the messenger and rushed down the stairs. Meryn's armies crashed against the exposed Vaden lines. However, Meryn himself saw a more ripe target.
Calden, Tamar,
he yelled, pointing at what was obviously the Vaden command center.
Bring your squads!
300 men broke off the main column following Meryn as he rushed the chaotic command center. The Vadens reacted with alarm, calling out in their foreign tongue. 3 men in shard plates stood around a table at the center of the camp. Meryn rushed the first one, barely allowing the man enough time to raise his blade to initiate a duel. Meryn spun, striking with a fluid blow. The shardbearer raised his weapon to block the obvious attack, and Meryn skepped his blade, phasing it briefly into smoke. His blade passed through that of his opponent, a small bit of smoke puffing free. It winked back into existence just as it slammed into the man's throat guard. The shardbearer stumbled back, stunned, and Meryn threw his weight into a second swing, shearing the man's head from his shoulders. Meryn didn't stop to pause as he moved on to the second shardbearer. To his side, Calden attacked the third man. Meryn engaged his opponent, attacking quickly, not giving the man time to react. To Meryn's side, several people watched the duels. An older man in Stormkeeper's robes and a tall red-haired man with a commanding bearing stood out. Within moments of the attack on the command center, the tall man was surrounded by nervous guards. He wore no plate, but Meryn saw smoke forming around his hand as he calmly watched the battle's proceedings. This is their leader, Meryn decided. Meryn's current opponent was not very good. Short of stature and aging, the man fought like one practiced with a blade, but not a master of it. Meryn needed no winds or skepping to turn aside the man's attack, then slam a couple of blows against his shoulders.
I yield,
the man cried, lowering his blade and holding out his hands. Meryn snorted, slapping the blade out of the man's hands. Several soldiers ran up to take the Vaden prisoner. Already, Meryn's men had secured most of the camp. Some Vaden soldiers from the main line were making an attempt to fight through to their commanders, but someone was rallying the Aleth near the castle. The Vaden army had gone from a powerful aggressor to a defender smashed between 3 different enemy forces. Meryn pointed at the Vaden leader within his blade.
Take this man captive, he told his men. Unless, of course, he wants to duel me with that blade of...
Movement flashed at the edge of Meryn's vision. Before he could turn, before he could raise his weapon in defense, he caught a glimpse of a small man in loose clothing dashing toward him. The man carried a long, efficient-looking knife. Meryn recognized him. The Shin warrior, the one who had taken him captive on the plains of Alaskar. The man with the unnaturally fluid step. Meryn's reaction was sudden and guttural. Even as the Shin man jumped at him, Meryn summoned the winds. Pain flared in his wrist, and the winds curled and twisted around him. A column of air smashed into the Shin man, throwing him backward, ripping the knife from his fingers. The Shin warrior was tossed across the camp in a blast of wind. He smashed through the map table, then crumpled to the ground on the other side. Meryn stood breathing deeply for a moment, trying to fight away the flaring pain in his wrist. To his side, Calden wasn't faring very well in his duel. The man had only received his blade a short few weeks before, and he had very little sparring experience. Meryn spun, turning toward the Vaden leader, who was now ringed by 2 tensets of Lochanron spearmen. The man stood alone. Where was the other? The old Stormkeeper. The aged man had disappeared. Meryn raised his blade commandingly toward the Vaden leader.
You lead these forces, do you not?
The imperious man regarded Meryn and the Lochanron troops as if they were merely curiosities. He glanced toward the Shin warrior.
The Windrunner, the Vaden leader said, looking back at Meryn.
Yes, Meryn said.
I was warned about you, the Vaden said. It occurs to me that my source should have been a little more specific.
Command your army to surrender,
Meryn ordered, trying to maintain his confident attitude. Something about this man was unnerving.
I did nothing wrong, the man decided. I made no errors of judgment or mistakes. I could not have known that the Lochanrons would betray me.
He paused, studying Merrin. I lost by a fluke.
Give the command,
Merrin said, glancing toward Calden. His friend wouldn't concede the duel, no matter how much better his opponent was than he. The Vaden leader frowned, then glanced toward his forces. Merrin had been on enough battlefields to tell that the Vaden army was not faring well. Surrounded and suddenly outnumbered, it would not last long.
Very well, the Vaden man said. The day is yours.